Welcome to Whiskey Cask, Cask Strength Conversation, featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie. This is episode number 348 for December 17th, 2011. Support for Whiskey Cask comes from Redbreast Single Pot Still Irish Whiskey. Find out more at redbreastwhiskey.com and join the Stillhouse to get your own personalized whiskey journal. Coming up in a few minutes...
One of the visions bigger visions we had back then was that one day we would have a bottled product on all the stores in Sweden.
Rickard Lundborg is one of the 8 co-founders of Sweden's Mackmyra Distillery, and this is a special weekend for them. They've already outgrown the original distillery and are opening a new distillery this weekend a couple of kilometers away. I'll have more with Rickard later on, along with the real story of the ski trip and hot tub party that led to Sweden's first distillery. I'll also have the calendar of events, the comments of the week, and the What I'm Tasting This Week department, along with a special trivia contest, but you'll have to keep listening for the details on that one. First off, let's look at the week's news. It's brought to you, as always, by Glenmorangie. The big news of the week came on Friday when Beam Inc. lived up to the pledge that CEO Matt Shattuck made when Beam became a standalone spirits company back in October, that it would be acquiring new brands and not be a takeover target. Beam has agreed to buy Ireland's Cooley Distillery and its brands for $95 million. The deal gives Beam control of Cooley's Tyrconnell, Connemara, and Lox Irish whiskies, but ends Cooley's run as the last remaining locally owned Irish distillery. According to Beam's news release, the Teeling family will continue to be involved in running Cooley after the sale closes early next year. The Teelings did not return calls for comment after the announcement, and Beam declined to make anyone available for interviews until after the sale closes. Now, this makes Beam and Diageo the only whiskey companies in the world with distilleries in all 4 of the traditional whiskey-producing countries of Scotland, Ireland, the U.S., and Canada. Last time around, I mentioned the Bonhams Whiskey Auction in Edinburgh this week, in which the highlight was the first bottle of 55-year-old Glenfiddich Janet Sheed Roberts Reserve. It's one of 15 bottles honoring the 110-year-old granddaughter of Glenfiddich founder William Grant. The bottle was auctioned for the charity WaterAid and brought a winning bid of £46,850, or just under $73,000. This beats the current world record for a bid on a bottle of single malt whiskey, which stands at £29,700, or about $46,000. Now, it needs to be noted that last year's Macallan in the Lake decanter auction at Sotheby's in New York City to benefit charity Water raised $460,000. However, it is still in the process of being certified as a world record by the editors of the Guinness Book of World Records. 10 more bottles of the Glenfiddich Janet Sheed Roberts Reserve will be auctioned around the world over the coming year. Again, all of the proceeds will go to charity. By the way, the winning bidder was online and anonymous. It's been a little more than a year since Ken Story, the owner of Glasgow's legendary Pot Still Bar, passed away. Shortly after his death, the owners of the building housing the Pot Still ousted Ken's family as tenants and brought in a new team to run the place. I'm glad to report that there's been another change at the Pot Still. While Ken's family has moved on for the most part, longtime manager Frank Murphy is back in charge, and he's building up the whiskey selection back to what it was in the old days. This ends my semi-official boycott of the Pot Still. I've posted the link to the Pot Still's website back on the resources page of the WhiskeyCast website. In other news, Boonehaven will be expanding its range in the U.S. in early 2012. My sources have indicated that the heavily peated Boonehaven Toychek will be added to the U.S. lineup. It's been available in Europe for a couple of years. I picked up a bottle at the distillery when I was there for Fagil in 2010. You'll find my tasting notes for it on the WhiskeyCast smartphone apps and at the website. Ben Riach hit a milestone this past week. The distillery near Elgin has been around since 1898, but never before had the workers managed to fill 10,000 casks in 1 year. They hit the 10,000 mark this past Wednesday. Production manager Stuart Buchanan filled a 500-liter ex-Pedro Jimenez sherry puncheon full of new-make spirit. Gordon & MacPhail is adding two new wine cask finished whiskies to its private collection range, a 1991 Linkwood finished in Cote Rioti casks, and a 1997 Kalila finished in Hermitage casks, both bottled at 45% ABV. And finally, there's a new whiskey education class available online and in DVD format. Our good buddy Dave Broom is the headmaster for the course. Year one has 50 lessons produced on location in Scotland, with Dave explaining the principles of single malt whiskey production, and veteran distillers serving as guest instructors, along with a whole bunch of tasting notes. Dave plans to expand the course to include distilleries from all over the world in coming years. That's the news. It's brought to you, as always, by Glenmorangie, unnecessarily well-made. Just a reminder, later on I'll have the Villeroy & Bock Whiskey Trivia Contest. You could win a set of fine flavor nosing glasses and a decanter if you know the answer to my trivia question. That's coming up later on. The comments of the week are brought to you this time around by the folks at Highland Park. Had a lot of comments on last week's episode and the feature on the Bonhams auction in New York City. Rex Albin of Aberdeen, Scotland, had a strong reaction to one of Martin Green's comments during our interview. Here's what he posted on the WhiskeyCast Facebook page. Quote, Martin Green is seeing whiskey's return after 20 years in a collector's cupboard? Absolutely atrocious. Peter Silver has the right idea, drinking it. Lewis Reps also posted this comment on the WhiskeyCast HD version. Very nice to see how it works in real, but lots 291 and 356 were not mentioned. Guess which lots Lewis was the high bidder on via the internet. I mentioned the Macallan 12-year-old limited edition packaging with X-ray photography from Nick Beasy a few weeks ago. Well, the Whiskey Fairy delivered a bottle with one of Nick's images on it this week, along with some 18-year-old Macallan, and a sample of the new Macallan Lalique 60-year-old Curiously Small Stills edition. As you might expect, there were some comments on the WhiskeyCast Facebook page after I mentioned this delivery and posted a picture of the Nick Beasy packaging. Rob Wallace suggested, I assume this means you had a spot near the top of Santa's nice list. Annie Bellis said, this is a stunning package. Enjoy the lineup. And Macallan brand ambassador Eden Algy posted this note, sorry, Mark, I think we got the wrong address. You were supposed to get a T-shirt. Well, I'll have the tasting notes for that 60-year-old Macallan later on. I'm not sending that one back for a T-shirt. In the meantime, if you have questions or suggestions, you can always post them on the WhiskeyCast Facebook page or just email me. My address is comments@whiskeycast.com, and the emails of the week are brought to you this time around by Highland Park.
Hello, this is Jerry Tosh of Highland Park, the makers of the best spirit in the world. If you like to go onto the WhiskeyCast website and click on the banner, then it'll take you to the inner circle and sign up, and we'll send you as much information about Highland Park as you'd ever need to know.
Let's check the calendar of events now, brought to you by Laphroaig. There's a light schedule over the next couple of weeks because of the holidays, but Julio's Liquors in Westboro, Massachusetts will host a Macallan and Highland Park tasting on the 21st of December and a tasting of Lombard single malts on the 28th. The Scotch Whiskey Experience at the top of Edinburgh's Royal Mile has a Hogmanay Distillers' Fair on December 29th and 30th. The Kensington Wine Market in Calgary, Alberta will host a Glenmorangie tasting January 12th. The next Universal Whiskey Experience Dalmore Dinners are set for San Francisco on January 17th, Los Angeles on the 18th, and Las Vegas on the 19th. The Victoria Whiskey Festival is coming up January 20th through the 22nd in Victoria, British Columbia. I'll be there that weekend. We'll have special coverage along with a new episode of WhiskeyCast Virtual Tastings from Victoria. Finally, the Whiskey Exchange in London will hold a special Burns Night extravaganza at Vinopolis on January 25th. Of course, those are just a few of the events coming up over the next several weeks. You'll find a full calendar at the WhiskeyCast website, and it's brought to you by Laphroaig. Take a virtual distillery tour at Laphroaig.com. While you're there, become a friend of Laphroaig and claim your own square foot of Isla.
WhiskeyCast, brought to you by Redbreast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. In conversation with Barry Crockett, master distiller, Redbreast single pot still Irish whiskey.
I think that where celebration of a special event is concerned, you can't really surpass Redbreast in terms of the single pot still style. and certainly for any, say, special family occasion or when people call to the house, people would normally maybe expect something a little bit better, and in that case, I would present a Redbreast.
Redbreast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Those in the know, know Redbreast.
Time now for a Whiskey Cast in Depth. This is a big weekend in Sweden's Gastrikland region. It's home to Macmyra, Sweden's first whiskey distillery, and now its newest distillery. For lack of a better term, call this one Macmyra 2. Turns out the original distillery wasn't big enough to meet the demand or the dreams of the founders. Rickard Lundborg was one of the 8 Swedish whiskey lovers who decided one night on a ski trip years ago that Sweden needed a whiskey distillery. Today, he's in charge of international sales for Macmyra.
It has been a fantastic journey this first decade or so plus. For every year, as we have realized, what we believe is the true potential for Swedish whiskey, and also the reviews and all the customer inputs, we think this is a good and natural next step for us. It feels now like a natural thought, but of course, maybe not 10 years ago, we would have envisioned this.
Tell me about the new distillery. As I understand it, this has some unusual characteristics to it.
I think most people would agree with you there. It's what we call a gravitational distillery, so it's actually built, it's quite high, and it's about 35 meters high. Divided into 7 different levels, and it actually follows the process. So we actually have the mill and the malt intake at the very top, and then for each level, as it goes down, there's a new step in the process, and then the barrel filling is at the ground level, so to speak.
Why'd you decide to do it this way?
A number of reasons. One of them being, of course, we perceive ourselves as we're in the traditional business of malt whiskey, obviously. But since we're the first Swedish and we're quite young as a company, we perceive ourselves as being quite modern and innovative. And when we got the chance to build the new distillery, starting from scratch, basically, we said, okay, this has to be a very good facility for making the whiskey, obviously, but also as an experience to visit, etc. And we wanted actually to be quite green or climate friendly, and with this layout, so to speak, it actually reduces the energy consumption in the process, and it's also a very good way of learning and seeing the process, where on each level you actually have one step in the process. And we also like the design of it, which is kind of Nordic modern, and that is what Macmyra is, basically.
So essentially, the major step energy-wise in the process, at least initially, is just to get the grain up to the top of the facility.
Yes, and then I would say more or less, it's the gravitation pulls it down for each level, except for in some minor parts where we actually have used pumps, but that is only to increase the energy efficiency in that step. So when this is all trimmed in, we believe we will have one of the highest reuse levels of energy in the business, being a modern distillery and designed with that in mind from the very beginning.
Now, this is going to operate in conjunction with, or does it replace the original Macmyra distillery?
That will be in conjunction. We will keep the original Macmyra for many reasons, and this will be an add-on. And in the long run, since we are in the whiskey business, and that's the whole analysis behind this, is that our original site, our original distillery, will cater for Sweden, the Nordic markets, perhaps one more market like the UK or Germany. But if we want whiskey lovers around the world even to have the opportunity to taste Macmyra and Swedish whiskey in the long run, we have to add capacity, and we want to add rather than to replace. So we actually have, if you come to visit us, you will actually have the opportunity of seeing where Swedish whiskey started off, and also where the future of Swedish whiskey lies, so to speak.
Now, I have to ask this question because I know that there will be people who will raise it if I don't.
Yes.
Traditionally, a single malt whiskey comes from a single distillery. And
yes.
If you now have two distilleries, that are separate. It's sort of like even Brora and Clynelish, even being just across the road from each other in Scotland, have to be labeled differently. How are you going to get around this one?
Well, what we've done is basically because, as you mentioned, you have those cases in other cases, and then traditionally when you want to expand your capacity, you add a new pair of pot stills and washer backs, etc., etc. Since our original site, we don't have, it's not possible to do it there, so we chose to do what we believe is the best thing, that we have actually the same, all of the equipment is the same, and we also are using the same water. However, we have put it a couple of kilometers from the original McMira, so to take care of all the bottlenecks that we had with the original distillery.
So are you going to have to label this one a little differently to reflect the fact that there are two distilleries now?
Well, actually, that's a more of a question, you know, in 5-6 years' time. But first of all, we will make sure that for everything that we do, we have an extremely high level of traceability. Just to give you one example, the barley that we use comes from three individual farmers in Sweden, and we, of course, know them since we don't need more than three farmers. And for everything that we will do, we will have the traceability, and that will also obviously reflect on the distillery as well. So when that day comes, I'm quite sure that we will be as open with this as with everything else that we have done previously.
Of course, and obviously we do need to point out that the whiskey from this new distillery won't be ready for several years yet, so you do have some time to try to figure that out.
Actually, tomorrow is the official inauguration, and that is a starting point, but for everyone in this business know that there is a time period between starting the production and actually having the products out on the market.
What have you done as far as increasing your warehousing capacity to accommodate the new production?
Well, actually, this is kind of a greenfield place that we have found. So over the next, we work with 10-year visions. We founded a company back in 1999, and one of the visions of the, let's say, bigger visions we had back then was that one day we would have a bottled product on all the stores in Sweden as a continuous bottling. We fulfilled that vision back in 2009 when we reached that. We had the first edition, which is also available to some extent in New York. And we said, okay, what do we do now? We could either kind of say, okay, we made the first Swedish whiskey and it's out on the market. Maybe we should stop here, but we're not the right people to stop. So we wanted to look, what could the next step be? So we launched the vision of 2019. We're still a couple of years to go there. But there were some elements in that, first of all, with the new distillery and the increased capacity. And over the years, we will add all the different parts of whiskey making around the distillery. And that will mean warehouses. It will also mean that we will have a local production of the barley, but also for maybe a cooper or so for making the barrels, etc. So actually, when you visit McMira in the future, you will not only see the distillery and the warehouses, but you will actually have the chance to see everything that is related to the production of malt whiskey, basically, even including a hand bottling facility, etc. So we have a couple of years, and for each year we will add new functions, either because they are needed for the production and warehousing, or because it's a demand from the customers and visitors that we get there. So we our intention is and our plan is to provide a truly unique experience, not only for the bottles and the product itself, but also when you come and visit McMira.
And you have sort of become a tourist destination already among whiskey lovers throughout Europe, but especially within Sweden, right?
Yes, I believe so. Well, there's still a long way to go, obviously, but now, over the last couple of years, it's more of people finding us, maybe not in Sweden, because we've become quite well known in Sweden, but we do get visitors from other countries as well, and either they're just passing by and they hear about it when they're in the area, or they're actually coming targeted to visit. They have visited 50, 60 other distilleries, and now they come to see the first Swedish. So it's a mix. But over the next year and 2 years, I think we will see a growth in this as well. And I think it goes together with the interest for new world whiskies in general, for all the whiskey lovers that have tried the excellent Scotch and Irish, and of course the American, Canadian, etc. There is a number of people who want to try the first Swedish as well, and also to visit us, obviously.
Now, I want to hear the story behind Mac Mira. We've told this before, but never with somebody who was actually on that ski trip.
Yeah.
Many years ago. You were in the hot tub when all this was being discussed. I want to hear it firsthand from you.
Okay.
Tell me the story of how you and your friends decided that this would be a good idea.
Yeah.
And I want to know how much whiskey was involved in this discussion.
Well, let me pick up on that one. That's very easy. So exactly 8 bottles of whiskey involved. And the story behind it is me and 7 of my friends, we knew each other back from the university. We were out having regular jobs, all different kind of engineering jobs. So we had a yearly get-together at this ski hut, and this was before kids and everything. So for the bar, for the evening, everyone brought a bottle. This was back in 98, so in March 98. But for this particular year, everyone brought a single malt. Out of coincidence, and that was actually the whole basis for Mac Mira and for Swedish whiskey and for the idea, because as I say, sometimes if it had been 3 gins and 2 rums and 3 whiskeys or whatever, then we wouldn't have this conversation. But now the whole evening centered around whiskey, and out of that came, for us being engineers, you know, wanting to ask questions, we started off with, ah, that's a coincidence. How come everyone brought a single malt? And then we started tasting them, and then we went into how come it all tastes excellent, very different, all from more or less the same country. I think it was all Scotch, maybe one Irish. And then later in the evening, someone popped the question, why isn't there a Swedish one? And that was a very interesting question, because no one had an answer. We didn't, obviously, back then. But we say, maybe it's, I don't know, impossible or forbidden, or, but we knew there wasn't a Swedish one. But we couldn't just let the question, we had to find the answers. So we continued discussing that very evening. And then at the end of the evening, we said, we have to find the answer to why there isn't a Swedish whiskey. And if there is no answer, then, as a natural thought, very late in the evening, we said, we will make the first Swedish whiskey.
After all 8 bottles had pretty much been consumed, right?
Well, not all of them, I mean, but to some extent. And that maybe that wasn't the strangest thing, because I think there are people around the world who have similar ideas. The strange thing was the day after, the Sunday, because the idea survived the Sunday. If you see what I mean, because
yeah.
Normally it was, oh, this was a fun idea, now let's go back to whatever we do. But it survived the Sunday and the following week, and we started off at the other end saying, why isn't there a Swedish whiskey? And I don't know when, but after a half a year or a year, we never found the answer. We just said, okay, no one has done it before, but there is no good answer to why isn't there one. And then we, from that was basically the starting point. And then we designed the pilot distillery, the probably smallest distillery in the world, legal distillery. We used that for developing our recipes. That took 3 years, something like that. We could upgrade the capacity back in 2002 to our, let's say, current size, except tomorrow and onwards. And then we had production going back from 2002. But still, with often asking the questions, why not? And another thing that is very important for us, and actually from day one, has been, we are not making a copy. We are not saying we're almost as good as Scotch or Irish or anything like that. We try to imitate their style. We're saying that we're very proud about our product quality, but it's different from Scotch. It's different from Irish. It's like adding a new member to the international world of whiskey makers, and that is the Swedish style and the Macmillan style. So that is what has been driving us from day one, basically, wanting to add something. And that goes back, so we don't have to, like when we design our new distillery, we don't have to look how does all the other distilleries look. We can say, how do we want to make it? How can we make it different? And why is it different?
Now, I am told that at least one or two of you went on a reconnaissance mission to Scotland to go to a couple of the distillery schools and visit some distilleries.
And that's very true.
Which ones did you go to, and were you involved in the research yourself?
Well, there were for us, the lucky coincidence, I guess you could call it, was that we were eight. We still are eight founders, because when we started off this and look into it, a lot of work. I mean, all the background, all the research, all the permits, very interesting, 17 different permits you need in Sweden to make it legal. So I would say that all of us have been involved in different parts of it, but for the early years, of course, we went to a number of distilleries in Scotland, in Ireland. We've been to Kentucky a couple of times as well, to Taiwan and so on. So, but from a very early stage, we said, actually, it was the first trip that we went to Speyside. We said, it's fantastic, they have 100 distilleries, and they're very open, and you get to see the whole process, etc., etc. But that is when we said, if we, let's say, find a master distiller in Scotland, or do everything as they do it, then it will only be a copy. So we said, what we have to do, and we didn't have any money, obviously, we didn't have any experience, we didn't have the network, our approach was, now we know how they do it, but we ourselves have to find how we want to do it. Therefore, we built this very small distillery, which we could finance ourselves. And instead of finding a master distiller from the outside, we say, let's put 3 years into this of our own time, and then doing the whole product development from day one. So whenever we have a problem, or whenever we want to do something new, we have the experience with ourselves within the company. So, apart from that, of course, a lot of getting more general information. But the whole idea from the beginning was to say, develop at least one or more recipes, the Macmillan style, but doing it ourselves from day one, so we know and have control of that whole process.
I have to ask, what did your significant others have to say about this brilliant idea after the ski trip?
Well, actually, they were quite involved, because the eight original founders are four men and four women, and actually three are today spouses of three pairs. So, I mean, it was a joint thing from day one, so there wasn't a problem with that. On the other hand, it was like, instead of you going on a golf trip together with your fiancé or wife or friends, or maybe you buy a boat, an old wooden boat or so, you put a lot of hours into that. We put it into a whiskey distillery instead.
Where did the name Macmillan come from?
Well, the name is actually the name of the place. It's an old Swedish word, which comprises of two parts. It's the Mac and the Myra, which is basically an old ancient name for a moor or wetlands, because it used to be that about 400 or 500 years ago. But it's been called that since the 17th century. So it's the name of the place, basically.
And no regrets in those 12 years or so?
No. It is a journey. I mean, if you do it on a day-to-day basis, as I and two of the other co-founders do, there are ups and downs, but one, like tomorrow with the inauguration of the new distillery, you get kind of a perspective. And then it's, on one hand, it's been a fantastic journey the first, let's say, 12 years. And still, when you look at it, it's only at the very beginning. And I think that everyone involved, and there's a lot more people involved now, obviously, are really looking forward to the next 12 years as well. So I can't complain, no.
What's the next whiskey you're coming out with after? I know it's up to 07 now, right?
That is correct. We had 07 released in just about a month ago. And we also had for even more selected, we have above the Macmillan Special, we had the Macmillan Moments, our most boutique whiskey of the smallest quantities, the 1st of December. So we will continue with the special series. We have some surprises planned for next year, obviously. But that is always on top, and at the same time we will increase our efforts and the distribution of the first edition firsthand, and also for the Macmillan Brooks whiskey. So we will try to continue being able to supply our continuous bottlings, and also keep the flexibility of our small scale with the Macmillan Special and the Macmillan Moments.
One final question. When you fill the first cask at the new distillery, what are you going to do with that one? Is that one going to be saved for something special, or saved for posterity? What are you going to do with that first cask from the new distillery?
Well, for the first cask, the very first cask, we will do something very special, and so special I don't think we don't want to decide that right now. We just will put it in a very special place. But what we will do is, as you may know, we have a couple of thousand cask owners, most of them Swedes, but also some international. So we offer them the possibility of purchasing their own 30-liter casks. And from the new distillery, we will make a similar offering. So a lot of the first spirits that comes out of that, we will actually offer to our current or new cask owners, so they can start their own Swedish whiskey journey with their own barrel and following that from year to year, and then they will actually have the possibility of making their own Macmillan after, let's say, 5 or 6 years when they are at their peak.
I reviewed Macmillan's Special 07 2 weeks ago in episode 346. You'll find my tasting notes for that and some of Macmillan's other expressions on the WhiskeyCast website and in the free WhiskeyCast smartphone apps for iPhone, iPad, and Android. The Apple version is brought to you by the Glenrothes, and the Android version is brought to you by Ben Romick. Speaking of tasting notes, it's time for the What I'm Tasting This Week department, brought to you this week by Villeroy & Bock's Fine Flavor line of whiskey glassware. The whiskey trivia contest question is coming up in a minute, but first, I mentioned that sample of the Macallan's new 60-year-old Lalique decanter release earlier. It's number 4 in the Six Pillars Lalique series and subtitled Curiously Smaller Stills. It's bottled at a cask strength 53.2% ABV, and not what you'd expect at all from the Macallan. That's because this was distilled back in the early post-war days when the Macallan and almost all Scottish distilleries were using peat fires to dry their barley. As a result, the nose is much peatier than current-day Macallans, along with a good balance of cinnamon, baked apples, subtle fruity touches, and a mild oakiness. The taste is mouth-filling and vibrant, full of life and flavor, with a great smokiness balanced by black tea and dark chocolate-covered cherries. The finish is very long and smoky with a touch of cherry. And believe it or not, if you tasted this one blindly, I guarantee you 60 years old in the Macallan would probably not be your first guesses. It's outstanding. I'm scoring the Macallan 60-year-old Lalique series bottling a 95. Now, a few weeks ago, I mentioned Jameson's newest release, Select Reserve Black Barrel. It takes a blend of pot still and grain whiskies and uses a combination of heavily charred bourbon barrels and sherry casks to get a darker and richer taste. I received a sample this week. It's bottled at 40% ABV. The nose has notes of red grapes, apples, black tea with lemon, and hints of smoke. The taste is creamy and smooth with a nice touch of cinnamon spice, vanilla, honey, black tea, and lemon. The finish is long and lingering and reminds me of a lemon and honey cough drop. I'm scoring the Jameson Select Reserve Black Barrel an 89. And finally, I received a sample this week of the Compass Box Last Vatted Malt. You may remember my interview with John Glazer a while back, in which he lamented the change in Scotland's whiskey law that bans the use of the terms vatted malt and vatted grain whiskies in favor of blended malt and blended grain. That law finally took effect on November 22nd, and John created the last vatted malt to mark the end of that era, along with the last vatted grain version. The malt version uses casks of 36-year-old whiskey from one of the distilleries near Aberlour. They don't say which one. And 27-year-old Kalila. They don't say that either, but they do say a distillery located in Port Eskeg on Islay. Kalila is the only one that fits that description. It's bottled at 53.7% ABV. The nose has a mild peatiness with notes of raisins, figs, and malt with a subtle touch of almonds. The taste is a great balance of sweetness and smokiness. Barbecue sauce with a hint of chili powder and molasses, and the finish reminds me of barbecue sauce on beef ribs with a hint of toasted bread. I'm scoring the last vatted malt from Compass Box an 89. Once again, this week's tasting notes are brought to you by Villeroy & Bock's fine flavor line of whiskey glassware, and here's your chance to win a set of four nosing glasses and a decanter. All you have to do is answer this whiskey trivia question. It's tough, but not impossible. I want you to name the distillery managers or master distillers of these five distilleries. They've all been mentioned at least once on WhiskeyCast during 2011, and the term distillery manager or master distiller is pretty much interchangeable here. The distilleries: Auchentoshan, Balblair, Bernheim, Highland Park, and Laphroaig. Once again, name the distillery managers or master distillers at Auchentoshan, Balblair, Bernheim, Highland Park, and Laphroaig. To enter, all you have to do is click the Whiskey Trivia Contest banner at the WhiskeyCast website and post your answer on Villeroy & Bock's blog site before December 31st, 2011. The winner will be selected at random around January 10th, 2012. You'll find all of the rules at the Villeroy & Bock blog. The key thing, this is open to anyone over the age of 21, worldwide. No geographical restrictions. They will ship the decanter and glassware to you no matter where you live. Our Whiskey Trivia Contest is brought to you by Villeroy & Bock's fine flavor line of whiskey glassware, available at fine retailers and Villeroy & Bock's own stores and e-shops worldwide. Glasses worthy of your whiskey. You'll find the contest link at the WhiskeyCast website, along with links to our WhiskeyCast Facebook page and my Twitter feed, the calendar of events, the photo gallery, the WhiskeyCast store powered by Amazon.com, and a complete archive of past episodes. The address is WhiskeyCast.com, and my email address is comments@WhiskeyCast.com. I'd love to hear from you. Support for WhiskeyCast comes from Redbreast Single Pot Still Irish Whiskey. Find out more at redbreastwhiskey.com and join the Stillhouse to get your own personalized whiskey journal. WhiskeyCast is a production of Cask Strength Media, copyright 2011, and comes to you from the charming, yet regrettably dry town of Haddonfield, New Jersey. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Have a happy and safe holiday season. Thanks for listening.